Sadvaitam Sabadutam Krishna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Varam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Hey Krishna Kamina Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagadvache Gopesha Gopika Nata Radha Tantana Murskite Sapta Kanchana Gaurani Radhe Vrindavane Sani Vrishya Bhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpata Rubyashya Kripa Sindhya Devacha Pachitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vinaya Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So for today, you see our topics on the board here. Fates of the unsuccessful yogi. Losing both ways? Who can answer? And the two categories. The two categories of fallen and reborn. Deviated transcendental. Just these issues alone, the fact that they are being raised, shows you how complete Bhagavad Gita is. It deals with both success and temporary failure in pursuing goal of the uniform life. You must realize the uniform of life has a goal, and that we are meant to strive for that goal. Once we have accepted that there is a goal, and it's not material happiness that we're striving, then we may want to ask, well, do I have it in me to achieve that goal? And what if I desist? Or what if I fail? I mean, for now, I might be very determined about spiritual life. But who knows, in a few years, my senses may decide that it is possible to enjoy the world. You know, and I may start acting like everybody else and become caught up in the illusion again. What will be done with me then? It's a fair question. I mean, you know, I might have already gotten burned out from trying to enjoy my senses, trying to squeeze something out of this here life. So I might have gotten temporarily burned out. But after a few years of vacation, I may feel the urge once again to sally forth and try to acquire gratification for myself. And the mind is also a sense of it. Actually, without enjoyment from the mind, it's impossible to live. You have to feel, your mind has to feel that you are having a good time or you will have a good time in the future. So basically, it's your enjoyment and distress. Both of them are functions of the mind. People, if they don't feel any possibility of mental enjoyment, they just go nuts. They commit suicide. Even if you're in a jail cell or in an isolated remote area, you try to amuse yourself with your own mind. Because actually the mind is the central clearinghouse, the CPU, central processing unit of happiness and distress. So in all situations, the mind has to imagine that there is pleasure or the possibility of pleasure. There has to be some notion in the mind that seems enjoyable. You'll find this true in everyone, in every situation. It's amazing what the mind can do, how much the mind can visualize and imagine. Perhaps you may remember being sick, very sick once, and just laying there in bed. But still, with your mind, you were imagining things to amuse yourself. You've ever been to India, gotten sick and you're flat on your back. Hot sun and mosquitoes are biting you. What happened to you then? So there you are, and you're laying, and there's no comfortable bedroom, and you're laying on a mat on the floor, and it's hot and muggy, and you're sick, and none of the Western conveniences are around, and somehow you try to just relish some kind of nice mental attitude. And then you realize that mental enjoyment is actually all the enjoyment that there is in this world. You enjoy it through the mind, whether it's romance, this activity, that activity, even work. You can enjoy work in that you don't like having to conform to somebody else's hours, but you do like feeling a sense that you're accomplishing something and you have abilities that you can demonstrate. All this is a mental affair. We're relishing various mental currents, various mental waves. You should try catching yourself through that. You see how powerful the mind is. So, because the mind is so powerful and it can be attracted to material existence almost instantaneously, you'll rightfully wonder that even if I take up the transcendental path, there's a good chance of failure. There's so much glitter out there in the world of illusion, what will become of me? My determination may get weak. So, it is for that reason that Arjuna is asking questions like this of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we should bear in mind that all the means for perfect success in one lifetime are given in Bhagavad Gita. Nevertheless, it's also true that some percentage of persons do misuse their independence and kind of get sick again after becoming cured. You all know that in the health field, in hospitals, some patients follow the doctor's instructions very nicely and they gradually get well. And other patients, they follow for a while, then they stop. Then they follow for a while, and they stop. They never really get it together. There are all types of patients in this world, speaking of physical. And also there are all kinds of patients in this world in terms of getting over the material disease completely. We're all individuals. We have different levels of commitment and absorption and spiritual practice. Of course, we should desire to become firmly situated on the transcendental path, beyond the vicissitudes, beyond the changes of the body and mind. How do you do that? You must become aware of the spirit self. The activities, in fact, the very existence of the spirit self, that is so confidential. In one sense, when you say there's no self, it's like in Buddhism, anatta, no self, the about that, that's correct.
There's no self like anybody knows about or you can see them. The activities of the real self are the most confidential spiritual knowledge. The qualities of the spiritual self are the most confidential part. But in the beginning, to get people to just stop their craziness, we're going to talk no self. Just stop acting your thing. It's like if you're spending your life banging your head against the wall. You won't stop. Someone says to you, no need to bang your head against the wall. There's no self. And then you stop. Of course, the real solution is to find actually what you should do with your head. And that's what Bhagavad Gita is trying to instruct you. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is beyond nirvana, or beyond the mere cessation of existence. That's what makes Krishna consciousness sometimes a bit difficult for people to understand. Krishna consciousness actually involves things beyond liberation. Beyond the negative into the purely positive. Return to our first verse?
No, therefore,
spiritual life means you're trying to give into it. Like a hand, when you're about to eat tonight, will the hand pick up the food and try to eat on its own? No. What does the hand do? It brings food and brings it to the mouth, the nourishment of the whole body. So we are living entities, we're not the whole. Our constitutional nature is to assist in the pleasure of the whole. This is a radical and revolutionary difference. Therefore, even spiritual practices that are based consciously or unconsciously on the notion that I am the enjoyer, only to set you very limited, because the real problem is thinking, I am the enjoyer. It's such a problem that, for example, Buddha taught, once says, you don't exist, so don't worry about being enjoyer because you don't exist. Just to strike hard at this root problem of thinking, I am the enjoyer. In other words, you're so unintelligent, you can't hear about it. The positive activities of the pure spirit self, because they confuse it with materialism. Therefore, because you're not that intelligent, no self exists. Of course, the most intelligent thing is to understand the activities of the pure self and not confuse it with the activities of the material self. So we have to get the root cause of material existence. The root cause is thinking, I am the enjoyer. I should feel pleasure on my own, independent of Krishna. You understand? It's just as ridiculous as a hand picking up food and thinking, I will enjoy it. I will feel nourished by eating the food. So the hand brings it to the mouth, and then the whole body is nourished. So yes, ideally, in Krishna consciousness, you don't wake up in the morning and kind of turn on your bliss meter and test yourself. How do I feel this morning? I mean, I know in the beginning, you'll be like that. Gradually, as you become purified, you start to think, how much pleasure can I give Krishna today? Any difference? sounds very nice in theory, but actually, the whole art of spiritual practice is to make it not just theory, but actuality. Who is the enjoyer? This is the battlefield. The issue that we're really grappling with. And one that causes us a problem. It's like this, right? Struggle with spirituality. How can I be the enjoyer by just a tiny part? I'm meant to bring pleasure to the whole. And automatically, without even worrying, then I'll be taken care of. But we don't have that confidence. So many verses we've been as independent, separate entities. For so many verses we've been trying to ferret out enjoyment for ourselves. All those ferrets things out, right? And we're like that. A long nose or a long mouth? Yeah, long nose. Ferrets. And we're like that. We wake up in the morning and have a long nose and then we try to ferret out pleasure for the day. And we try to find other ferrets who will band together with us and together we search for pleasure. If you can catch yourself like that, you can become very self-disciplined. Well, let me ask you this, Jerry. Do you ever ask yourself why you should be the enjoyer? Why not? Who told you you should be the enjoyer? Who gave you that idea? What gave you that idea? Oh, why is it that way? Who told you that? Where did you get this notion from? See what I'm getting at? Where did this notion come from? Well, you gotta find out. What do you say? Where does this notion come from that I am the enjoyer? I should be the enjoyer. Where's conditioning come from? But you'll find it in also in other species of life. Although their capacity for choice is much more restricted still. Other species of life also pass towards the world. Whether consciously or instinctively, they're still acting towards the world. Although in a very submerged, dull way.
Okay, but it's actually enjoying the connection with something like animals who think which seem to be for enjoyment. Like folks like seeing passion in their own human, but maybe it's to do with feeling their company.
But that's a human, yes, it's like humans. Dogs like to be petted, humans like to be petted. But it's sense gratification. Yeah?
Yeah, it's sense gratification.
Yeah!
There's also something about connecting with somebody.
Yes, that, you're right. That is sense gratification. Let me connect with something so I can feel pleasure, but you're not making the right connection.
No, that's what I mean. There's a subtle difference between the bit that feels pleasure and the bit that just feels an actual connection with another human being. Like, somebody might put their hand on you, and you don't necessarily think, oh, that's a really wonderful sensation, but you can actually feel the other spirit cell inside that body.
It feels spirit. You cannot feel spirit physically. You'll feel another entity. You'll feel the physique of another entity. You can feel the, if you're more subtle, you can feel the mind of another entity, but through physical and mental methods, you cannot feel spirit. Although indirectly you can tell its presence, but you cannot feel directly physical and mental method. But that's also part of sense gratification, you're saying. You want to feel that you exist by knowing others exist and recognize that you exist. Reassuring.
That's what you call sense gratification.
It's all part of it. It's subtle, though. That's more subtle.
Right.
You feel like you're belonging to the human race, belonging to the family, belonging to someone, belonging to the universe. It's all subtle sense gratification. But what is the real connection you should be making?
Well, I know the answer.
That's why yoga actually means connect, to wake up.
I can still get up and do that. Well, so.
Any other questions about this? That's why you need to understand there are different influences, different energies operating in this universe, and you can take your pick which one of the energies you want to associate with. Therefore, mind, in association with your loosely energy, becomes filled with thoughts of, I should enjoy, I need to enjoy it. And mind, in connection with spiritual energy, becomes infused with thinking, I should give pleasure to the supreme enjoyer. So there are methods, for example, of meditation that will, if not stop temporarily, at least diminish your attempts to be the enjoyer. But the only permanent solution is not so much one of desisting, but of one of engaging in your natural constitutional position. So it's very nice, for example, to become aware of how your body is functioning. You can sit very still and feel how your body is functioning. And then, as you become more advanced, you can feel how your mind is functioning. You can see your emotions flowing. So in that way, you're becoming aware of all your excess baggage is acting. But that activity of just watching and becoming aware of your physiological emotional state, that's not your original nature. Certainly you are aware of your conditioning, but what about the root conditioning of which you think you are the enjoyer? Because even through meditation, you can still try to be the enjoyer. Of course, some people say, well, you sound like a killjoy. What's wrong with enjoying? The wrong is that it's actually not enjoyment, and that by trying to be the enjoyer, you cancel out your real happiness. Because real happiness comes from recognition of your constitutional position as being enjoyed. That's the revolution. You are the enjoyed. That means that you are energy, and you're meant to be enjoyed by the energetic source. Yes! Are you grasping why this is such a radical revolutionary shift? It's a bit inconceivable. How do you not be the enjoyer? I mean, come on, I'm curious. The whole world turns on this illusion that we are the enjoyers. And you even, for example, in the beginning you'll turn to Bhagavad Gita, hoping that you'll enjoy. I read some of the other books and tried some of the other things. This book will help me to enjoy it. It's really nice reading, you'll enjoy it. As you're reading it, thinking you're going to enjoy it, you find your consciousness shifting. So to deal with Bhagavad Gita means to dare let the thought come into your intelligence. I'm not the enjoyer. Real life is something else. That's why Krishna spoke to Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield. Where's the enjoyment? And that was Arjuna's question, his argument to Krishna in the beginning. Krishna, what pleasure can come out of this path? What good fortune can come out of it? He's bringing up the position of the enjoyer. And Krishna just told him, fight and think of me. Victory and defeat is not your concern. You can speak instruments now. Just play the part that the whole ordains. Now you see why Bhagavad Gita is such a radical book. It's bringing about a total shift of consciousness. It's telling you, dare you think that you're not the enjoyer? Can you do it? Dare you think that you're meant to be enjoyed? Just like the hand brings food to the mouth and the whole body is nourished. Living entity is meant to bring pleasure to Krishna and the people. That sounds so far away from our existential condition right now, in which this I want to be what I want to be happy, I want to be pleasure, I want to be pleased. This bug is just fighting us all the time. What's in it for me? What's in it for me? And that's what Arjuna was arguing with Krishna about in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, what's in it for me, this battle? So, are we all starting to grasp that? It's the very revolutionary point. It takes a lot of... This is why we have spiritual practices. Because we must actually experience this, not just say it in theory. Oh yes, we are all part of the great one. We are all connected. Holism is everything, let's be holistic. No more fragmentation. We don't talk that stuff, but how do you act in that way? In every moment of the day, that is Krishna. How the part and the whole act in such a way that perfection is made obvious to the part. Perfection is always obvious to the whole. But to the part, we have this feverish disease in which we think, I am the enjoyer. The quicker you can kick this, the better. Like at a young age, you can really start dealing with this point. You're able to do so much good for the world. There's no need to wait till you're older and you smash your head this way and that way. You can do the greatest good for yourself and others by just trying to simulate this point and master your everyday life. Although, there's so much social pressure. Enjoy. You go out and get your happiness. Your senses. Reach out for the sense objects. That's normal. That's natural. Get for you. Acquire. Grapple. Grope. That is life. Have you ever think about what you're trying to acquire and grapple and grope is temporary and decaying in front of your eyes, like grabbing smoke. Next time you have a campfire, sit around the campfire and try to grab the smoke. You can go on like it all night long. can't grab his phone. And what's the only result? You get a cramped arm. And that's what happens in material existence. People try grabbing his phone. Ephemeral, phantasmagoric material happiness. They try different styles of grabbing. Thinking that's going to change the situation each time they open their hand. You can't grab smoke. You can't get a heart to stay here. So people, they die weary. Actually, they don't show it a lot of times, especially Western countries, because they're so proud. They don't even let their children know that it's all futile. It's good to understand what we're up against so we can understand Krishna's points about unsuccessful transcendentals. So this is the battle that transcendentals are dealing with.
Memory connects, such a little non-logic after alt ego and what it costs to do for the mind. This is what they have to open there. Another secret.
that activity that gives the supreme whole pleasure, concurrently, simultaneously, you've got to give the part pleasure too. You don't see it that way right now. Well, I really enjoy Bhagavad Gita. What's actually going on is, you studying Bhagavad Gita gives Krishna pleasure, therefore automatically the part gives pleasure. Because you're not yet conscious of all that's going on. All you know is, I as a little tiny part, imagine myself to be separate. I enjoy Bhagavad Gita. You can't see the whole system. Fascinating, isn't it?
Sentiment is there, but
Of course, unconsciously, they use that notion as a defense of their sense gratification. Because if you really define, very specifically, are you the body or are you not, it naturally causes you to rearrange all your activities. If you're not the body, then why are you acting for sense gratification? And to learn how to see this driving for sense gratification in all our affairs, even subtle, that's a great art, a great science. In other words, we think we're being innocent. So much of the day, but actually we're not. We're trying to take pleasure. So Buddha Gita will arm you with the required wisdom to see what you're doing throughout the day. So real insight meditation begins with understanding what your sensory apparatus and mind is doing during the day. That's just the beginning. Then you've got to make a solid step from false engagement by the false self to real engagement by the real self. That is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's to watch the movements of your body and mind. That'll give you, of course, knowledge, but not the highest knowledge, because you're not the body or the mind. Certainly, it is better to watch the movements of your body and mind than go around doing so much karmic activity. But unless you're actually situated in positive spiritual activity, you won't be able to simply just watch the movements of your body and mind year after year. You need positive engagement, positive absorption. We're still remembering the basics of spiritual science. I am different from the body. And my happiness is not bound up in the body. Now at the bottom of the page, 7 lines up from the bottom, we find this statement by Srila Prabhupada. To pursue the transcendental path is more or less to declare war on the illusory energy. Consequently, whenever a person tries to escape the clutches of this illusory energy, she tries to defeat the practitioner by various allurements. Now you may say, why is the Krishna energy called she? And actually, all energies are she. In other words, in terms of the Vedic spiritual text, he and she is not this major sense applied to what we call male and female. In the Vedic viewpoint, he and she applies to energy and the energetic. Enjoyer and enjoy. So in that sense, all energies are female, and only the energy of source is male. That the real understanding of masculine and feminine needs to be. Therefore, there is an illusory energy, just like there is an energy. Living energies, they are an energy, there is an energy illusion too. All are she. There's only one male as the energetic source. In that sense, we don't find any males anywhere near the fence. So our Arjuna Krishna since the Christianity is declaring war, anybody's trying to get out of his clutches. You feel that sometimes? There's different awareness for each of us. Who knows? All day, daydream.
Thank you.
understand we're getting up back to a hope standard. You see, we have to kind of expand, you know, our understanding of what enjoyment is beyond even Western conceptions. In other words, to speak more to feel that others are dependent on us, to feel that we have a role to play, a central role to play. So in the Vedic terminology, that's also grouped under enjoyment. Although Western civilization is hard to see that. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he is the supreme enjoyer, he's the supreme friend, and he's the supreme controller. But illusory life means that we try to be those three things. We try to be everyone's friend, we try to be the controller, and we try to be good.
In this world, we find that everyone's duty-bound, perhaps,
but they don't know what the number one duty is. Everyone wants to be responsible, but they don't know what the real responsibility is. So Krishna consciousness is not against responsibility, it's a recognition of what it is. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person appears to be maybe carefree, but no, they are very careful about the real motivations. Successful yogi, and in text 38, he offers amplification on that question. Ashtindo vaya vibrastas, chanabhravivan nashtati, apritishto mahabaho, vimudo brahmana papi. Yes. Another perfect question. You know, Arjuna's questions are so salient. They're so perfect. He's doing that service on behalf of us. He's, for our education, he's undergoing an experience as if he's an illusion. Responding in that way. So we can see, since we get a classic example of what it's like, that's what Arjuna is asking. But it seems to me that you give up your yoga, you give up your transcendental endeavors, you'll fail both of these. You'll be a spiritual failure and a material failure. Because in order to take up activities of reality, you have to give up your illusion. But then you give up the activities of reality, and you also give it up. You lose your mature activity, you've lost on all fronts. That's a good question, doesn't it? Did you ever think of that? Nope. Yeah. So what is the answer? First of all, even someone who thinks he or she is materially successful is losing. Because any material gain will be lost. It's like when you get on the bus, you pay your fare and you sit down. Similar at the time of death, you pay your fare with whatever you accumulate in this life. You leave it with the bus driver and you go sit down and go to another body. So whatever you've accumulated, skills, wealth, hobby, they're just fare to your next body. You leave it behind in the question box. And sit down and transit to another body. And what that body is, you don't know. So in that sense, everybody's losing materially. Still, Arjuna is asking, it seems, if the aspiring transcendentalist fails, then he apparently loses both ways. In other words, he can enjoy neither material happiness nor spiritual success. To really answer this question, you've got to know that there's no such thing as material happiness. Only illusion. Therefore, actually, this is that. Only in apparent terms is this an actual, as we say, two-sided presentation. Spiritual and material success, it seems I'll lose both. Both hands are full. Spiritual success, material success. I'll lose both. No, there's no material success. But just for the sake of appearance, if I do it that, I'll lose both ways. There's no both ways. Material gain is imaginary. That's easy to understand when you remember the statement. I come into this world with nothing and I leave with nothing. In between birth and death, I'm busy grabbing onto everything. I'm trying to squeeze some success out of it. So go to the next verse, text 39. We've covered losing both ways. 39. Etande sansayam krishna chaitan mahasya sheshata swaranya sansayas yasya chaitanya vipapajate. This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. Krishna is the complete whole. Therefore, Krishna is entitled to answer this question. Krishna is qualified to answer this question. Give you the overall view, because Krishna is the supreme overall. You want to understand the system, you've got to go to the supreme system maker. You can't answer the question because you're part of the system. You're not aware of the whole system. You're just a lens of the cog in the infinite existence. So first, Krishna responds in text 40. A parchment. Shri Bhagavan Vasa. Parta Nadeya Navika. Yes, any endeavor on the path of Krishna consciousness never meets with any inauspicious result. Even if you stop, that progress stays with you. If you only complete 1% of Krishna consciousness in this life, in your next life you start off in that point. You take your college credit, university credits with you. But not in material activities, you lose your credit. Even before death comes, you do not take your credit.
Sudamata.
very large, but still like this.
Okay. If someone, can you
read it, if someone gives up all material prospects and takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no loss or degradation in any way. On the other hand, a non-devotee may fully engage in his occupational duties and yet not gain anything. From the material prospect...
Yes. So even if you are taking the free shelter of Krishna consciousness, your natural position, and you don't persist, still there's no loss. But if you fully and perfectly execute your material duties, you will not gain anything, you'll lose it. Even if you want to add things up in the pot and loss column, still Krishna's telling you, go for the transcendental, make even a partial attempt. Otherwise, even by your so-called, or even by your apparent full and proper engagement in material activities, you're still losing everything. Very good common sense presentation, yes? You want to look at things, like a gambler, profit, loss, a businessman. Still, go all out for spiritual attainment. Even if you cannot persist, still you won't be the loser. But if you go all out for material success, and even if you do get it beyond your wildest expectations, you'll still be the loser. Whatever spiritual progress you gain in Krishna consciousness, you'll never lose that. Okay. Now we get to the two categories of unsuccessful yogis, page 353. Dravya punya kritam lokan, ushitva shashvati sama. Sukhinam shinatane, yoga vrashto vajayate. Yes. So, in the purport we see that the unsuccessful yogis are divided into two classes. One who is fallen after very little progress, and one who is fallen after long practice of yoga. So for the one who is fallen after short period of practice, he goes to the higher planets, the planets of the devas, the demigods, where the material happiness is far beyond earthly standard. Like the difference between living in Hawaii and living in North Korea. And after a spell in the heavenly planets, the higher planet system, you come back to Earth. Now you may ask, why did the unsuccessful yogi go to the heavenly planet? Because from the material point of view, even transcendental activities are the best kind of good karma, although they're actually not good karma. They included within them are the effects of good karma. Unsuccessful yogi, even though he's not trying to form good karma, he gets all the effects of good karma in his next life. So he goes to the higher planets, where generally you only go if you're performing good karma. And then, after a certain time, he falls back to earth in a conducive situation for spiritual advancement. That means families of wealthy persons or families of righteous priests. Why the wealthy family? Because ideally you don't have to worry about your maintenance and you can just have so much free time for spiritual cultivation. And why a family of Ramana priests? Well, that's obvious. social person is found anywhere. Encounters are full-time engaged in studying and teaching spiritual rituals, provides a favorable atmosphere for spirits to go. Of course, there's danger too. The Prabhupada himself pointed out that. You can take birth in the family of the wealthy and just become overwhelmed by the wealth and forget your original purpose. Or you can take birth in a family of priests, brahmanas, spiritual scholars, and just become absorbed in metaphysical knowledge without devotion. Just accumulating dry metaphysical understanding. Without getting to the point of it all. Therefore, the Prabhupada would just advise us, finish your business in this lifetime. Don't take a chance on another. Next, in text 42, we go to the one who's fallen after a long period of practice. Page 354. Atapa yogina meva gure bhavati dhimatam etati drava bhaktaram loke jama yaritrasam. Am I going to read that? Yes, we may ask what's the difference between this kind of birth and birth in the family of Brahmana teacher or priest. Well, Brahmana teacher or priest means still within the modes of material nature, the mode of goodness, righteous. Whereas transcendentalist, a family transcendentalist, is beyond even goodness, righteousness. Beyond all the dualities which are existing. That's the rarest birth in this world. So in the purport, the father is saying that he himself had the opportunity to take birth in such a family, as well as the spiritual master. That's the rarest birth. To take birth in a family of Bhagavad Gita practitioners, staunch practitioners of Bhagavad Gita. That's much more advantageous than taking birth in, say, a family of priests. Teachers of Vedic knowledge. Because, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the goal of the Vedas, the compiler of the Vedas. By all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. But Ramana priests can just get caught up in, you know, the Ayurveda or astrology, the astrological Vedas, the Jyotir Shastra, something like that. So, Veda means knowledge. All the departments of human knowledge have their origin in the Veda. World War II, the Germans were studying the Vedas for aeronautic information. That's where they got the swastika from. Westerners, they read the symbol swastika, but actually the Vedic symbol being auspiciousness. Germans appropriated. Any questions so far?
On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success.
Yes, your divine consciousness of your previous life is not lost. Whatever efforts you made, that's where you start off from. Whereas whatever material activities you did, your effort is lost. The results are lost. No credit. And in the next verse, 44. Purvaja Senate Haiva Riyate Kapashrokisa Jidasurapi Rogasya Shabja Brahma Divartate. Let's read this one again.
So, this is without consciousness in this life. some perspective in the writing of the history, even without seeking out such an appreciative attention that the standing pool of the delicious history can
switch. Yes, a real, pure, bumper Christian consciousness beyond the ritual of religion. In other words, whatever he did, not enough ritual, religious ritualism, or religious righteousness, piety, good karma. Although these things are striving for the conclusion is driving far beyond that. And just to provoke that controversy, Krishna is taking what we do on a battlefield, urging us to fight. And that's a challenge to all of the passion of piety and material righteousness. How can the other need to be a sacred focus on a battlefield who's fighting one another? It's about to understand that you have to know. The battlefield is composed of energies. Whose energies are they? One who knows that is beyond piety and material fitness. Pratyatnadhyatamanas tu yogi samsudakilvisa aneka dharma samsudat chitavyati paramyatena.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be many, many verses like this. That's the advantage of the Hare Krishna mantra and devotional service of Bhakti Yoga. You can finish it in one night, even if you have no previous thought. But in dealing with the other systems of yoga, it can take many verses. Jnana yoga, yoga requiring metaphysical knowledge.
Pardon?
Mystic yoga, in terms of acquiring yogic powers and mystical abilities. All these things are meant to culminate in bhakti, the original activity of living energy, of rendering love and devotion to the whole Krishna, the all around because of our pleasure. Sooner or later, you have to come to that. You can either do it directly or indirectly. If you do it indirectly, it takes many verses. Because this whole point of realizing, I am meant to give pleasure to Krishna, is so revolutionary that you may take many verses coming to it in an indirect way. I will study metaphysical knowledge, that way I will attain perfection. I will practice through powers, and that way I will attain perfection. I will perform activities of righteousness, good karma, and that way I will attain perfection. In all these endeavors is still the illusion. I am the enjoyer. I am the doer. As soon as you take up bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and devotion, then the conundrum hits you right through the eyes. Who is the enjoyer? Whose pleasure am I doing things for? That's why even a simple, innocent, naive practitioner of Krishna consciousness is more advanced than the greatest mystic yogi or metaphysical knower.
Depends
just to smash that impression. Buddha being partial truth. You don't exist. To knock you off your false plateaus. You don't exist. Therefore, what profession are you maintaining or controlling or enjoying? In the partial sense, that's correct. The false you does not exist. But what is the real you that exists? That you find out. And that your real identity is beyond the range of your ordinary sensations. By engaging in positive activities in relation to service, you'll start to get an affinity with the existence of your real self. Go for it. So those of you whose lives are being dedicated to me,
either with you this time or when you come back.